Inform, we're starting, because we need our CLE credit.
But you know what it is.
We're so glad you could join us in Eau Claire, in Madison, Oshkosh, and Green Bay. Welcome. This is our Lou Jones Breakfast Club meeting, and the topic is lender walkaways, and we have an all-star panel lined up. I'm just going to sit here and look pretty in my Orioles, Baltimore Orioles, orange and black, go O's. I was going to wear the T-shirt, but I don't want to jinx them. My husband said they're traveling today. That probably wouldn't be a jinx, but just in case, I didn't wear the T-shirt. I have a couple of off-topic things to talk to you about. One, on Friday at 3 o'clock, we're having our appreciation party, our seven-year itch party, for mainly for those that participate by volunteering at the Pro Se Help Desk, but really everybody is welcome. Come in and join the judges and the clerk's office for some refreshments, some cake, and just be with us and thank those that work at the Pro Se Help Desk. If you want to learn more about it, this is a perfect opportunity. But if you just want to come over and say, hey, it's going to be 3 o'clock, it's going to be down in my courtroom. So that's number one. Number two, we have Judge Shapiro's celebration. That's coming up on November 9th. And that's far off, so you don't need to, you know, worry about it now. But we are putting together a video. It's a surprise. And we would like anybody who would like to participate in this video to see either me or Olivier, who is going to be our videographer, and talk about participating. The plot is of Judge Pepper's creation. It's a fabulous plot. It seems that Judge Shapiro, who likes to be known as Jimmy of Jimmy's Angels, since he's got the three female colleagues, it seems that he's up for a promotion to the Mod Squad. And the Jimmy's Angels have been asked to do his background check. So we'll be going around, and we would love just a few words from practitioners, friends, colleagues, whatever, to talk about him, and it'll be something that he can keep and his family can watch and things like that. So please, if you love Judge Shapiro as much as we all do, take a minute, talk to Olivier about just doing a 30-second clip, tell a story, say a nice thing about him, a funny thing if you want, or whatever. It'll make it more special. So I wanted to announce that, and hopefully he is not here, because as I said, it's a surprise. We'll be showing it at the party on November 9th, so if you don't feel comfortable being on camera, come at least and watch the video with us. Okay, let's see what we've got today. It's lender walkaways, and it's an important topic, of course. We have a panel here. Katie Doyle from Legal Aid to help us with the discussion. Todd Koenig, who in addition to coming up here, and he's got a great outline from a trustee in Ohio. Todd has been our Lou Jones coordinator for the last 2 years and really appreciate all his good work. Olivier Ryer is here. He's got some information. And then Kyle Jasinski, correct? Actually has had a state court judge force a lender to go to sale or accept property. He's going to tell us about it. Todd, do you want to get us started?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start. Section 363 of the Bankruptcy Code then provides the trustee's power to sell property. 363B is a power just to sell the property, and then 363F allows a trustee to sell free and clear of liens, which is what we're going to talk about later on with the lender walkaways. I'll talk about 363B sales just for a minute. 363B sales allow you to sell allow the trustee to sell a piece of property, but Section 1303 gives those rights and powers to the debtors also, subject to the trustee's rights. With a piece of property, why would you want to go ahead and sell it through 363? Well, first of all, if there's marginal income in the property, maybe you're going to get a better result of getting that marginal equity in the property. You're going to have a better chance of getting that equity out if there's a sale as opposed to a foreclosure. Sometimes you have multiple properties. If you have multiple investment properties, what if you want to sell a couple of those properties so that you can get the equity out of them, so that you can go ahead and support the other cash flowing properties? Or sometimes you have a best interest of creditors test. What if you're in a situation where you have more equity than you can afford to buy back in a Chapter 13? Well, then the idea is go ahead and sell some of the properties, apply the proceeds, make your Chapter 13 plan payment more affordable. But you can't fund a Chapter 13 plan with just the sale of assets. Section 109E says that you have to have regular income as a Chapter 13 debtor. Most courts have found that non-ordinary course sale proceeds to be realized in the future does not satisfy the requirement for regular income. There's some alternate opinions. Collier and Judge Lundeen essentially have taken a fairly liberal view that says if the sale of the proceeds are going to be sufficient to fund your plan, then that should be okay. If business is going to produce income and that business income is going to support your Chapter 13 plan, then why not the sale of that business to support the Chapter 13 plan, or why not sale of the real estate? Well, there is an answer to that, and that is because if you have business income to support your Chapter 13 plan, that's ongoing and hopefully regular, whereas if you're just going to sell a piece of property, that's not ongoing. It has not happened before, and ideally is probably not going to happen again, so it's not regular income to just sell a piece of property. But regular income itself has been interpreted fairly liberally. There's one case in the course materials there, In re Bassett, that they said there was debtors who had regular income from rental properties of $1,025 and jewelry sales on the side for $50, and that court held those things to be regular income in a case where there was $500,000 of secured debt. So you have to have some regular income, but you really shouldn't plan, I suppose, especially in this district, to have just a little tiny bit of income coming in to support your plan. One penny a month for 60 months isn't going to do it. When a plan's going to propose little or no payment, then the judges and trustees are going to think that the plan's proposed for some delay type of a tactic.
If you're selling the property, most of these properties are underwater, so yeah, the idea is you would be selling the property and giving the proceeds basically to the mortgage creditor, and then if you don't have regular income, what's the point of the Chapter 13? I don't know how that would help us here for most of these properties.
Well,
if you've got equity, that's great, but then you're probably not involved in a lender walkaway if there's equity.
Well, as far as the lender walkaways, I think the tool for that's really going to be a 363F.
Okay.
Of a sale. If you're just going to have a Chapter 13 plan that says I would like to fund my plan through a series of payments through my regular and consistent income, but also fund the plan with additional proceeds from the sale of the property. So I think that's fully contemplated. But the bottom line is that you can't just fund a plan just from a sale of property, especially if it's going to be 3 or 5 years down the road.
Right. So what is your plan? I'm going to put the property up for sale, and when I get an offer that's acceptable to the lender, I'm going to sell it? Is that what you're thinking is? Because if that's the case, how do you get around what payments are you going to make to the lender pending that sale, and how do you get around the equal monthly payments issue in Chapter 13?
Well, the sale itself would be proposed, first of all, as part of the plan term.
Okay.
And after that, you bring it on by motion with notice to all creditors, and you file your certificate of service. And then you're going to want to be specific in there later on for the trustees to say, essentially to convince the trustees that the sale will occur on the terms as proposed and that it's going to occur within a certain amount of time. And then also to show that it's not the only element. You have to have some other regular income coming in.
Right.
Well, there's a couple of cases out there that discussed whether the proposed sale is likely to occur or not. There's an older case in the materials called In re Newton that took a fairly narrow view of what was considered a likelihood of sale. And then In re Crawford that took a fairly liberal view. Both of those cases had a list of things to consider on the path of determining whether or not the sale is actually likely. Their list included the amount of the claim, how much the creditor's claim is. If it's a large claim or a small claim, it's going to make a difference. The state of the market, right now with a depressed market actually that works to the disadvantage of debtors. The current prospects, if you've got a live wire out there, if somebody's been looking and if there's a live wire, that's an issue. And equity. If you've got a lot of equity in the property or just a little bit of equity, the term of the listing, what the terms are with the realtor, and then a drop dead remedy, which is if the sale doesn't occur within a time certain, then what? Some of the drop dead options are, well, then we'll send it to an auction. Auction within a certain amount of time, maybe 4 months. Maybe you offer to grant relief from the stay. Maybe you offer to convert the case to a Chapter 7. Maybe you offer to vacate. But if you have a plan term that says I'm going to sell the property as part of the plan, then it's a stronger plan provision if you have a drop dead provision in there somewhere. But the debtors still have the burden of showing that the likelihood of the sale is proposed. And if the plan is going to get an objection from a trustee or a creditor, and if you're going to have a hearing on this, then plan to have your realtor on the stand. Get the broker on the stand to say what actions they've taken and why the sale is likely. Another factor is how long it's going to take. You know, you're not going to be able to be in a situation, you know, I know full well, that you can't ask Mary Grossman or Tom King to wait 3 or 5 years to have the sale occur. Most commentators are going to say that you should propose to have your sale within 12 months, and a lot of commentators say less than that. Mary Grossman in the room? Mary Grossman will allow you to have 12 months, and she's pretty adamant about that. So generally don't try to propose a sale that's going to be longer than 12 months.
Okay, again, Mary is the trustee, so that's... It's important what the trustee thinks, but what if the creditor is willing to go along with it, it seems to me, you know, that's critical here, because again, most of these situations are going to be short sales, the equity is not there, so if the creditor is okay with it, I don't know what the trustees, and you're making some regular payments to the unsecured creditors, I think getting the creditor's approval is critical.
A great factor. If you have, you know, use hypothetical, if you have an income property and it's got lots of equity in it and the mortgage lender just won't renew the note and maybe you've got some IRS taxes, if you've got a lot of equity in this property, you're probably going to have a lot more latitude from the trustee and then eventually maybe the judge to get that property sold, especially in this economy, to get the actual equity out of it or as much possible. The question becomes a lot thinner when there's not much equity or when there's no equity,
right,
or when there's not really a prospect, and that becomes important then to get the creditor on board. Give the creditor a call and try to talk them into your side. But either way, if you're going to make a plan provision that says I'm going to sell a piece of property to help fund my plan, you should be ready to show that there's regular income to support that, be ready to prove or show to the trustee and the judge that the sale is reasonable and the price is reasonable.
Right.
And that's for ordinary Chapter 13 plan where you are going to need some extra income to make the plan fly. It's a good provision. For the issue that we have today, for lender walkaways, that's not going to be the remedy, but 363F provides a remedy
that
says you can sell free and clear of liens.
Right. Great. I appreciate it, Todd. And again, check out the outline. It was prepared by a Chapter 13 trustee in Ohio, I believe,
Northern District of Ohio.
And it's very comprehensive. It's posted at our website. There are copies here in the room, but it's also posted at our website, and I hope it's a good resource if you have a situation. I understand in Florida, this is the methodology that they're using for the lender walkaways. Of course, the market down there is just a legend with these issues with the foreclosure crisis, and what they are doing is short sales for two bottom feeders for $1,000. They're selling the property. And when I said to the judge, well, what about the real estate taxes? He said, well, they're selling them subject to the real estate taxes. I said, so the bottom feeder is taking it. I said, I'm not sure it will work that way in Wisconsin because my understanding is they have to pay the real estate taxes in order to record the deed, correct? Right. So it would seem to me you would have to at least pay. No? Am I wrong, Doug Mann?
I mean, they ride with the real estate, Your Honor, and But you don't have to pay them, to my recollection, to record a deed.
Okay.
But
I thought you had to, in order to record that deed, they wanted the real estate, the transfer taxes.
Transfer tax you have to pay,
right,
correct.
But that's not that bad on a small sale.
Pro rata taxes for the current year.
Right. What about that? You wouldn't have to pay the outstanding real estate taxes to get those paid? Well, then this might work. This is what they're saying in Florida is what they've come up with. Just to tee up for those that aren't real familiar, this is the summary of a case. I wish I didn't have to pronounce it. Ogun Fididimi. It's in the materials. Debtor faced continual prosecution for failing to maintain property in which she had no equity, did not wish to possess, and which she sought to surrender to the holder of the deed of trust. That's what they call mortgages in Maryland. This is a Maryland case. Okay, so she wanted to surrender to the mortgage holder. On the other hand, the secured party apparently had no interest in capturing whatever equity it may have had in the property. The court had to dismiss this case because the complaint did not state a cause of action. The order sought to be enforced did not compel any action on the bank's part. All it did was to allow the bank to proceed to exercise its rights under the mortgage. Did the termination of the automatic stay, combined with the debtor's 11 U.S.C. 521A2A statement of intention to surrender property burdened by a security interest, impose an affirmative duty on the creditor to take any action? The court thought not. There may be an answer to the debtor's dilemma, but not in bankruptcy court. The bankruptcy court did not have the authority to compel the bank to exercise its foreclosure rights. So, and they went through, there's a case Pratt, where it was a car that was a junker car, and the lender was saying they wouldn't release their lien, so the debtor could junk the car unless the debtor paid in full. And the debtors here in this Ogun Fididimi said, that's the same thing. This is violating the discharge injunction for this bank not to be forced to accept surrender of this property. And Judge Manis in Maryland said no. And that, unfortunately, seems to be the answer from the bankruptcy courts that have looked at this. We compiled 5 Chapter 13 cases, and then this I guess this was a 13 as well, and then one Chapter 7 case, creditors' failure to foreclose did not violate discharge injunction. There doesn't seem to be a bankruptcy court that has been willing, or been able, let's say, probably would be willing if they could find a theory, but can't find a theory to force a lender who's been given relief from stay to actually go through and take the property back or finish, go to the sale or whatever. Now, maybe in state court, there are some remedies. Kyle, do you want to go first, or Katie?
Well, I'll go first just for a few minutes. What we are finding at Legal Aid, we have a significant number of cases in which people come to us where a foreclosure had been filed. The homeowner, usually for some pretty justified reasons, believes that the property should have long been sold. So you might be talking 2 years after the foreclosure was filed, and did not realize they had any ownership interest in the property. I had a 75-year-old woman who got pulled over because her taillight was out, and there was a warrant out for her arrest because of the fact that there were code violations on the properties. And so that was when she learned that the property had not been sold at share sale. It's very frustrating, especially in that case, because I had represented her throughout the foreclosure, and we had actually had litigation and summary judgment motions and so on, and the lender had gone to all that trouble to get the judgment of foreclosure, only to just completely walk away from it. So what we just started seeing more and more of these cases. One of the things that happens is when the judgment in in at least Milwaukee County Court, and I assume this is correct in other places, they close the file. So when they get the default judgment or whatever judgment of foreclosure form they get, they close the file. The file leaves the judge's courtroom just as it would with any other judgment, and it goes, and then there's no there's no tickler system, or nobody ever checks again to see whether there was a sheriff sale. And even though it's really not fully completed, we had a case, and then Kyle can follow up because he kind of built on our case, in which a man had turned over the keys to the property to a management person for the lender, and then he saw that there was a foreclosure judgment. He thought that was all part of his effort to give the property to the lender, and they got the judgment, and then of course 2 years later he found he had all these code violations. Why do they walk away? Well, in the city of Milwaukee, as long as a list tenants remains on the property for foreclosure, the bank is mutually responsible for the condition of the property and can be held responsible and can be cited for code violations on the property. So they want to get rid of that. So often what they do is the lender will file, will release the list pendants and then not do the sheriff sale, even though I think that's an improper release of a list pendants because they haven't completed the proceedings. There is a final hearing that has to be held to confirm the sale and foreclosure. In the case of the gentleman who came to us who had turned over the keys and so on, we brought a contempt motion. The foreclosure judgments state that the property shall be sold at sheriff sale. And then it goes on, though, to say, so it shall be sold at sheriff sale or public auction under the direction of the sheriff at any time 3 months from the date of the entry of the judgment. The 3 months could change depending on what type of redemption period. And so the lenders, of course, are saying that means any time after. So they're saying it could be 20 years from now, or but we feel there should be a reasonableness put into that standard. But in the case we did, we brought a motion for remedial contempt and imposition of sanctions against the lender, asking the court to require the lender to comply with a judgment. And in the judgment, it said they shall sell the property. In our particular case, the lender did oppose the motion, but when we went to court, the judge was very adamant. I think that's one thing Kyle will agree with, is that the judges just hate this. What are these lenders doing? Why do they even bother to bring the foreclosure? What is, why don't, they say, well, we have all these different remedies. We have all these options. We don't have to sell it. We don't have to do this. We don't have. But then why don't they do that assessment at the beginning, go buy the property, do their BPO, find out if it's something they even want. They have such high inventories now, and then work something out with the homeowner. But in our case, the judge made it very, very clear that he would grant this motion unless they brought in a human being from the lender to explain why this did not happen. And you know, they were unable to even think of a human being that would be able to come in from Bank of America to do that. So in the end, they sold the property. They did.
There are no human beings at Bank of America.
We have found that it seems like, you know, they say they employ hundreds of thousands, but I don't know. But they, the lender in that case, just they went to sheriff sale, they went to confirmation. We were able to take care of it. And so we did put a little outline back there, and for those of you who aren't in the room, if you want copies of it, we can get posted.
We can post it on our website.
That just has their theories for the contempt, and then also the court's inherent statutory powers, this is in state court, to impose sanctions for failure to prosecute a case, that's another argument we made, or failure to comply with a court order, which was to conduct the sheriff sale. The system, if we even start going in this direction, then lenders start doing other ways to walk away. And now we're discovering one of them is they don't foreclose, which is somewhat better, because then we advise people don't leave your house, but then they never can leave their house. They can't sell it. They leave it. It's in this limbo. If they did that and then satisfied the mortgage, that would be good, or, you know, left some hope that the homeowner has that they could at some point dispose of this property. It's just kicking that can down the road. But we have found that the judges are very, Kyle will explain, he's had a couple of cases too, but they do not like this practice of lenders, and so they're very anxious to find remedies, and we're starting to find different ways to present it.
I should say that when I started this, I had no idea what I was doing, and I put some feelers out, and I found Katie Doyle and some people at Legal Aid, and it really helped out a lot. I had a guy come to me who had bankrupted on a house, had it foreclosed on default. He did not show up. And I think 2 years later, started getting calls from the city. You know, you have to pick up your trash, you've got to weatherize this house. And was taken to municipal court, sued, and tried to plead his case with the bank, plead his case with the city, and nobody's really listening to him. And then he was later sued for property taxes, and that's when he came to me, and I had no clue what to do, and like I said, I got pretty lucky talking to them, and they said, we brought this contempt motion. The judge got angry, told them to bring some principles of the bank in, and they settled it out. I thought, oh, well, this is going to be great. And it turned out they did not settle my case. So the first one was a tax case, so I used some of the theories that they had and kind of basically tried to join the banks as a third party, and that judge allowed it. That was Judge Seifert.
So in the case it was the real estate taxes suing your guy, you third-partied in the lender, okay.
And brought some tort claims, negligent infliction of emotional distress. This particular client had been arrested for failure to pay muni tickets. And when it was all said and done, Judge Seifert was leaving the bench, and he just dismissed everything. He dismissed the city's claims against our client, and he dismissed our cross claims against the banks. But he said, if you want to bring a motion or a separate case for damages, feel free. He said, I'm not telling you what to do, but I like the negligent infliction of emotional distress.
And then he left.
And he went to the criminal court.
Yeah.
But so at the same time we were bringing the contempt motions on the foreclosure actions, and one judge made an oral ruling, and he was furious. That was Judge Amato. And I said, you know, this seems pretty complicated, and the law seems almost silent on this, or ambiguous at best. And he said, there's nothing difficult about this. I want you to sell this house. So that was great. But we came back for a confirmation of sale hearing, and the judge said, so did you sell the house? There were no bids. Well, then you guys took the house. No, we didn't. And it was just silence for a second, and then the judge was very angry. So we're coming back for a potential contempt and sanctions hearing in, I think it's about a month and a half. So we'll see how that goes. We had a second one where Judge White, this is another client, Judge White ordered a sale, and she had a written decision. The bank then brought on one of the bigger firms in town, and they filed a motion to reconsider. At that hearing, the judge said the sale should go forward, but we're going to rebrief the contempt sanctions issue. So that kind of backfired on them, I thought. We'll see how I guess we have competing orders right now on what happened at that hearing, but we'll see how that goes. And in the third one, we lost. The judge had decided that there's nothing in the law to allow him to compel a sale. And he said, you know, specifically, although I don't condone the actions of the plaintiff, I do not feel that I have the authority to compel a sale. And he said this is a matter for the legislature. So we did appeal that case. And I think briefs are due in about 50 days, so we'll see how that goes. But, you know, although we have had some success, it's too early to say, and what I thought would be a very clean, possibly just easy settlement has turned into a kind of a big
mess. So contempt is your number one theory, would you say, or?
On the motion to compel sale, it's post-judgment. In our case, it had been 2 to 3 years since the judgment. These were rental properties, so before these cases started, the client had bankrupted. You know, they ran into some financial trouble, filed bankruptcy. Bank gets relief from stay to file the foreclosure. So, you know, it looks like they're moving along. They file the foreclosure. Client doesn't show up. He's like, what am I going to, you know, I've already bankrupted on the property. They're not going to fight it. Default judgment, 3-month redemption period because of the waiver of a deficiency, and it's a commercial property. Client abandons, their tenants abandon for all they know, and, you know, 2-3 years later they hear about it, and then they start getting sued. And that's at the point when I had come in. But, yeah, it's essentially contempt for failure to enforce a judgment. And Amy Quester, who was at Legal Aid, had found a lot of interesting case law to support contempt. And there is a case where, and I think it's in the outline, that a party can't unilaterally go back on a judgment if without previously asking for relief. But I think there might be a short window after getting a default judgment where you can say, okay, wait, we're going to stop this.
Never mind. Yeah.
But I have had a couple of banks recently stop before the foreclosure judgment, just kind of dismiss their case. So they might be, sounds like what happened before is they get their judgment business as usual, and then they look at the house and do the cost-benefit analysis and say, ooh, we don't want this, and they're trying to just walk away. Looks like they may be, and you know, that's total speculation on my part, but doing the cost-benefit analysis a little earlier, which is probably good. And instead of getting their foreclosure judgment, just stopping the foreclosure proceeding. If the owner would like to stay in the property, I think that's the way to go. Then you can actually have some meaningful negotiations on how to modify this loan so things can work out for both parties. But yeah,
so if that's the trend, then that might be a positive thing. I thought they were under some sort of regulations or requirements that they had to, at a certain point, go into foreclosure, but maybe not? Am I wrong about that, Jay? They do? Oh, you don't know.
Okay. I think that's the case. We've had some issues where the lenders, you can tell it's coming from the business side, and we don't always know
right.
why they're doing what they're doing.
What's your take on the area, Olivier?
Well, what do you do if you don't have any equity and you can't get a judge to sell the property and you can't turn it back to the lender? The next step might be to try to find the bottom feeders, which might come in handy. It's pretty clear, it looks like, you know, the bankruptcy court in that Maryland court and also some of the judges here seem to be reluctant to allow the return of the property and force that return, so you need a third party. 363F may be able to help you in this case. It's important to build a case, I think, especially for the bankruptcy judges. If you want to go this route, you're going to need to show a trail of attempts to do everything you can to either sell the property or work with the lender. Are you filing a case? So you filed a 13, you're going to have to probably offer some kind of dividend to unsecured creditors, even if it's just for getting rid of the property. It helps getting the judge and a Chapter 13 trustee to approve your plan if you're offering something. Then the next issue is what kind of competence and what kind of evidence have you shown? There's some cases in the outline here which show what not to do and what to do. Some of the cases are basic, and we see it all the time. Yes, Judge, I've tried to sell it. I've listed the house. That's about it. I've met once with the realtor and not much else. You're not going to get very far. But there is the case of In re Crawford, which the materials refer to as the gold standard, and it's, I believe, on page 18 or so. In that case, it was a farm, so it was a pretty substantial asset. I think it was $1.5 million. But the debtor and her son spent considerable time repairing, fencing, clearing the trees, painting, and essentially, I believe the woman who was involved trying to sell the house decided to become,
certified home stager.
Yeah, a stager. So she decided to become a stager, and she was working hard on making sure that the property was clean and nice, and whenever the realtor would come to try to show it, it was in impeccable shape. And so that goes over all of the good evidence that you can try to show, but you're going to need to keep correspondence. How many times did you try to contact the bank to attempt any kind of negotiation, letters, correspondence? And then when all that fails, you have to try to find a seller. So 363F.
Buyer.
The buyer.
Yeah.
So you need two things mainly. You need the proposed sale price to be reasonable. In some cases, a dollar may be reasonable. If you have a low-value property that you tried selling and marketed and try to work with the lender and it's not working, if you've got a buyer that's going to come, pay a dollar and assume the taxes like it looks like it needs to be done, that might be reasonable. Then the method is also must be reasonable. So what are you employing to sell the house? And 363F goes over when can you sell a property free and clear of any interest of any lender in the case. And there's five of them. The first one is the applicable non-bankruptcy law permits the sale of such property free and clear. The entity consents. So you have a consent of the bank. That's probably not going to happen because this is the problem. They're not taking the property back. But if you have a buyer beforehand and you build it into the plan, you have a confirmed plan, what does consent become at that point? The third prong is such interest is a lien and the price with such properties to be sold is greater than the aggregate value of all liens. Well, that's not going to happen because you don't have any equity in this case, so that's not applicable. Such interest is in a bona fide dispute. I mean,
no.
Kind of hard.
Yeah.
You own it.
It's got the mortgage on it.
And such entity could be compelled in illegal or equitable proceedings to accept money in satisfaction of such interest. So, you know, that's pushing it, but
yeah.
then the question becomes, how do you do it? Do you do it by plan or motion or both? If you want to be safe, you should probably be building into both. The plan, like Todd mentioned earlier, 12 months is about as much as you're going to get, which is a very short window considering the sale season. I mean, if you time it right, you may be able to overlap two sale seasons, you know, early spring if you file, or middle summer where you might get some chance in both seasons the next year if you can't sell it the first time around. But your plan will need to lay out how you intend to sell the house, and then your motion will need to clarify your method. Todd mentioned that you want to have some kind of drop-dead option available. Auction is one type of sale at the end that you can use, but those are fairly complicated, and there's the Supreme Court case that came down that you have to allow the lender to credit bid so they could come in and kind of ruin any attempt you have at the end.
Well, if they would do it, great. I mean, if that's what you want, is them to take it, please credit bid.
But you also have the recording problem, so if you can build in the fact that if they do credit bid, they shall record, because the issue becomes, we've had some cases where they go through and they just don't record the deed.
So if they credit bid and then they won't record the deed, I think the bankruptcy court could make them do that.
Right.
You know, if they're not willing to, that's where we get
right.
The trouble.
In state court, then you have the
And
issue.
Again, I'm having trouble with your concept here. So your plan is, I'm going to sell this property that has no equity in it and that I can't get the bank to cooperate on, I'm going to list it with a realtor, and in a year I'm going to sell it, and if I don't sell it, I will either consent to relief from stay or auction it or something. That's my plan. Even if the trustee says, okay, is the bank going to accept that plan? Is the bank going to say, well, wait a minute, what price are you going to sell it for? What are you going to pay me pending
right.
selling it? Are you going to pay the regular mortgage payments plus the 1/36th or whatever of the arrearage? That's not feasible for most people. So I'm not sure this works.
It may, I mean...
If the bank consents...
Right, and then that's the trouble because you can't get any consent, so it's...
Dayton, what do you think?
Tacit consent is adequate. I think a lot of these cases, the banks don't participate. They've walked away effectively from the property. So if you send out your notice and they don't object, you get there
right.
with
okay.
the tacit
good point.
Consent.
Kate makes a great point that if you send your notice out, I'm selling it, it's a short sale, 14 days or 21 days to object, and the bank doesn't object, that is considered consent, and now you got them. That's a great point, Dave.
So then you can use any three type of sales by trying to, if you've got a passive bank like Dayton said,
you know, it makes it easier, and they may likely not act, especially if you bring it into the bankruptcy court, because like you said, there's a little bit more authority to force it if it has to happen. So if they've been passive all along, you've got three types of ways, which is your private sale, your public sale, which is just your listing. In a private sale, you'll have to show, you know, you have your brother or your father-in-law, your mother, somebody can come in and help, but you're not getting the bank's consent because it may still be short. You're going to have to do a lot of work on showing that the sales price is reasonable. So you want to have your appraisals, you want to show that you've attempted to sell it, and this is the best that you can get. Then in the public sale, you've just got the listing and the auction. The auction may be important to incorporate because, like Todd said, you want to have a drop-dead option in case you can't sell it within the first 12 months.
I don't. Those are common. Auctions are common in other parts of the country. I don't know so much around here. Have you seen that at all?
Or? It's an option available, so
okay.
It may need to build there.
We were hoping that we could get some ideas and discussion from the attendees, Todd.
I know that there's some auctioneers who will auction real estate, and there's a particular collection of realtors that I've had some discussions with. They're happy to conduct these auctions. They'll advertise and so forth. It's a little bit more difficult, though, when we're talking about these properties that, you know, probably the market value is $5,000 and nobody wants them. But on the other hand, then there's, as you put it, Judge, there's some bottom feeders out there that are willing to purchase the properties. Problem is sometimes the properties aren't worth as much as the accrued real estate taxes. The taxes are still accruing based on some pie in the sky assessed value by the city. So we've got taxes that have accrued for much more than the buyers are willing to pay. So my question is if there is no objection by the city, can you sell free and clear of liens, including any outstanding real estate taxes maybe owed to the city, and let the lien attach to the proceeds of sale?
I would think so. They have their adequate protection package in the form that they could, if they have a passive consent, they had their opportunity to object. So that's what their adequate protection is. If they want to participate, they can. And if they don't, then they waive their option to do it. If the property doesn't have value.
Can they be compelled at a legal or equitable proceeding to accept the money satisfaction of their lien?
Where are we talking about that are very, very to happen? We're talking A, that the lender is not going to respond to this, and B, that the city is also not going to respond to this. I mean, I don't know how many motions out there that are brought when you're trying to sell it for a fraction, a very small fraction of the property, that you're not going to get an objection A, from the lenders, and if there is real estate taxes there, if the lender is being passive, then B, the city's going to walk with what's coming to the city. So we're pretty aggressive in that context.
But he's saying that this property is worth less than, and some of these kids come in with owing 3 years of property taxes at some very steep, and when you tack the interest on. So he's saying the property taxes are more than the value that a bottom feeder or even a non-bottom feeder is willing to pay. Is there a way to force the city to take
whatever the property sells for?
Yeah. Doug?
Well, and just based on recent experience, the city, as I understand the law, has no discretion but to require the full payment of the real estate taxes to release the taxes. So if they're owed 3 years at $5,000 a year, their only ability is to take the $15,000 in full payment of the taxes. Otherwise, their option is to foreclose. And my understanding is after that point, it goes to the, I think it's the Department of City Development takes title, and then they can sell the properties perhaps for less than what the real estate taxes are. But it has to, by law, go through that process.
I think we're talking about two separate things, though, Doug, because in my proposal, where I have a client that is being garnished by the city on the money judgment that they've taken, and the properties have deteriorated to the point where they're boarded up and they don't have as much value as is owed on the taxes, the mortgage company won't foreclose. How do you get the guy out of that loop? Well, 363F seems to provide the solution. And I think that's what the trustee that wrote the outline was suggesting is, look, bring a 363F sale, find a bottom feeder, propose to sell to them, let the parties object. If the city comes in and says, no, we want more money, say, well, tell you what, here, we'll let you be the buyer. If the mortgage company comes in and says, no, we object, we want to get paid, you say, well, go ahead and bid. Your objection can be that you want a credit bid. Take the property. The point is that we just want the property out of the debtor's name, and if we can get an order from the federal bankruptcy judge that says this sale is going to occur free and clear of liens, liens attaching to proceeds, a title company will accept that. They'll insure the title for the buyer. So all we need is an order that can be entered in the bankruptcy case. If we have objecting parties, I think we've accomplished our goal because now we have active parties who are willing to perhaps take title.
Doug?
But in a number of these cases, Todd, there isn't enough money to even pay the real estate taxes.
You're not hearing what I'm saying, Doug. I'm saying real estate taxes are $15,000. You got a bottom feeder who's willing to pay $5,000. So you bring in a motion under 363F to say I'm selling for $5,000, liens attached and proceeds of sale, including real estate tax liens.
But I'm saying that bottom feeder buyer, from my recent experience, is not going to want to take title unless the taxes are cleared up because he or she knows that in 3 years it may go to tax foreclosure sale.
Right. You're still not listening to what I'm saying, Doug.
Okay.
And I don't mean to debate this, but look, I'm saying that the sale would occur free and clear of those real estate taxes. The buyer would get clean title.
But the city will never go along with that.
Okay, great. Have them come in and take the property then.
They won't.
And you can't require them to do so either. I mean, I think we see what you're trying to say, but we're saying that even if you can sneak it past the lender who...
We're not trying to sneak anything, Pat.
passive lender, another way of saying that. But anyway, even if you are able to get it past the passive lender, and to be honest, if the lender hasn't paid the real estate taxes for 3 or 4 years, the lender probably doesn't want the property anyway.
Right.
Unless somehow it slipped past its radar, but that's probably not going to happen. So then if you just have the city that's on the hook, I haven't seen the city ever go for something like that before, and that's what we're trying to say. And then you're trying to come back and say, well, we'll force the city to do it. Well, you can't force the city to do that because there's just nothing in the code that will require them to do that.
Well, what about F5 that says the creditor could be compelled in a legal or equitable proceeding to accept the money satisfaction of their lien?
That's the issue. Could they be compelled? They have a statutory lien. Could they be compelled to take money for that lien? I don't know. Judge McGarity?
Well, what about the supremacy clause? I mean, you're saying that there is nothing in the bankruptcy code that would allow the bankruptcy court to force the city to, in essence, get rid of its lien. Why not? I mean, if 363F will do it, it'll do it. Because the federal law is going to supersede the state law that says that the property cannot be transferred free of the real estate taxes because the property is worth less than the real estate taxes. So I think maybe that's where it is. I don't know that anybody's ever tried it or it's ever been tested and, you know, determined in any way, but it might be worth it.
We're going to try it.
Good. They're doing it in Florida. If it works down there, it should work up here. Any other ideas? So there's the sale. Doug?
Just two comments. One, I had heard that sometimes lenders are required to take it through some stage of foreclosure to recover on a guarantee or to have Freddie Mae or what is it, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac buy out their loan. So they got to comply with some kind of state foreclosure to say we took it this far, and you know, then they can recover on their guarantee. And the second comment is, I don't know of any foreclosure law that even if you say they shall put it up to sheriff's sale and the lender goes there and doesn't bid, I don't know of any compulsion to require the lender to bid even their credit bid. They can just stand there silent, I think, and if there's no equity in the property, and that's been my experience recently, it's got $15,000 of real estate taxes, it's worth $5,000 or $10,000, it's got a $50,000 mortgage, nobody wants the property. Nobody's going to bid anything, even a bottom feeder, because he or she wants clean title, and they're not going to get it in that process because the taxes will run with the real estate.
You're not going to get it in state court, but you might be able here. And one of the things they mentioned is the importance of the motion and the order for the title company also. If you're going to attempt this, because then they will be reluctant to go ahead with it if you don't have that order. So it's important to do the plan and the motion. Yes, Judge?
If the owner, like this professor says, if the owner is getting garnished for real estate taxes, there must be some personal liability for real estate taxes. We also have the additional problem that that personal liability continues to accrue as long as the property is not sold. And then could that person, well, not if they've gone through bankruptcy once, because that would be a post-petition liability, maybe the city would keep on garnishing for the personal liability on the real estate taxes even after the property is no longer an issue. There's not too much you can do about that.
Well, maybe you could go in 13 at that point.
Probably,
and I don't think it would be, it's only going to be a priority for the last year. I mean, we think about real estate taxes as secured claims, but they actually do get a priority, but I think it's only 1 year's worth or something. So maybe you could use the 13 if that's what's...
where they're suing everybody personally on the real estate taxes. They're not waiting the 3 years. They're filing a lawsuit right away and starting the garnishment. And so you are seeing people doing their bankruptcy and then counting out the 4 years and coming back with the 13 for the real estate tax. But that's really an issue, a hot issue right now.
Could you guys hear that in video land? Dayton said that the city here is starting to sue everybody personally for real estate taxes. They're not waiting 3 years and then going through tax foreclosure. They're just coming out of the blocks and going after personal liability. And that one strategy is to, if you've gotten a 7 discharge, you can wait the 4 years. Petition to petition is how it's counted, and file the 13 and take care of it that way. My understanding is of the priority is only 1 year, so just a general unsecured claim that you could get discharged from.
Isn't Milwaukee the only city that has personal liability on real estate taxes?
Well, that's actually a state law.
A state law.
Yeah, I mean, this county is just Milwaukee's the only entity that's doing that on a regular basis.
Okay, but in most cities, counties, whatever.
Most they don't.
Okay, so it's good that you didn't hear what Dayton said, because it doesn't matter to you out there.
Well, no. If they had it in Fond du Lac or Brown County or whatever, they may start this procedure.
Right. Well, thank you, everybody, for coming. This was a great panel. We got some state court ideas, some bankruptcy ideas. Again, the outlines will all be posted. for those in the outline areas, everybody here please sign if you want your CLE credit. Outside, you need to email Paula to get your credit. Next month, we're having a CMECF. Our folks from the clerk's office, our trainer and Sean and a couple other people are going to be here. There's a lot of new stuff, of course, with the new releases that have come out. How do you file documents under seal? How do you deal with amending things, withdrawing things? So we're going to have a CMECF presentation next month. And then mark your calendars for December. That's Jack's ethics program. You get your ethics credit just in time for those of you that have to report. And we also have cookies. So thanks for coming. Thank you, panel.